Welcome back. Thank you for letting me go on vacation and not having the show. You guys didn't have a show last week, I assume.
No, we did a show without you.
Yeah.
I did a show by myself.
Well, welcome back to you.
Well, thanks.
I couldn't quite remember. I was kind of like eyeballing my text message at like 9:05. I was like, is it this week or next week?
If and I just nothing walk came away from in the phone, and nobody bothered me. Get in touch with me.
So I was like, it's got to be this week. This is the week.
And it's crazy because I was looking at Jenny and I have been looking at the calendar for the summer and all the different things, and I'm going to be gone for at least 3 weeks this summer. So, that's going to be a new thing for me to spend that much of my summer gone, not working and not doing, this and not just.
Is this one of those 3 weeks or is there more 3 weeks?
No. 3 weeks like in June and July.
Oh, is that for personal time? What is it? Or is that work?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going on probably two different mission trips with our church, and then we're a vacation, like family vacation thing.
Oh, nice.
So just stuff, but it's just going to add up. It's a lot of time away from rhythms and work and all that. So.
Well, next week, I forgot about it till just now. Derek and I are driving to Texas on Wednesday morning. Oh. So if we want to tape Tuesday morning, just letting you guys know. The plan was we're going to drive to Texas. I got invited by Bailey's. I don't know if anybody out there is going. There's a local sheet metal guy that I talked to online. He lives like 10 miles away. We've never met in person, but we're going to meet in Texas. Bailey's, the metal machine company, one of their representatives follows me online, and he reached out to me and said, hey, would you like to come to the sheet metal workshop? And it's going to take place at Gas Monkey Garage. And so I was like, if I'm going to drive, because I like to drive, and I said, I'm going to bring my companion. He said, no problem. So Derek's my ride or die. So we're going to go down there. It's next weekend, but it might take 2 days to drive to Texas because it's close to 2,000 miles away.
Whew.
So,
did you happen to see that Instagram post that I reposted? I think it was yesterday or the day before, of the guy that would take the sheet metal, and I don't know what the tool's called that puts creases in metal. Usually, you would use that tool to kind of strengthen up a large panel, but he carved a tractor.
I saw.
It was just insane.
They use the bead roll. Those guys that can draw on the bead rolls. It's unbelievable to me. Huh. I can't even understand how it happens. It's just so incredible. There'll probably be some of that action going on. It's going to be exciting. Cool. So I'm probably going to bump into Drew on our trip. We're going to go see Drew.
Oh, cool.
Hello, Drew. Just confirming that in the public. And we're going to probably bump into Drew, and we're going to probably bump into Andrew Alexander from Blacksmith Tools. So it's going to be a fun trip.
Yeah.
So we'll decide after the weekend whether we tape Tuesday or skip it. It's your call.
Okay.
Giving you guys plenty of room to come up with an excuse. You got like 6 days. I got an internet and it's going to be out Tuesday morning. Yeah, they're ripping up the road.
Well, I was on vacation. We did spring break. The kids were out of school. And my oldest is headed to college in the fall. So this was like our last, all of us home for spring break at the same time. That dawned on us a couple of weeks ago. And so we were like, oh, we should probably come up with a trip. So we ended up going to the New River Gorge, which is in West Virginia. And it's about 5 hours from here. It's not far. Absolutely beautiful. I mean, it's just a gorgeous place. Gorge, because it's a gorge. It is really amazing. It's a national park, one of the national parks, and they have, well, we did a bunch of hiking and some other stuff, but they've got a lot of world-class rafting, and they have this bridge that runs over the gorge that's 800 and something feet, I think, off of the water. Like, it's way, way up there. And it's pretty amazing to drive over, but they also do, they weren't doing this while we were there, but they do like base jumping and all this stuff off of this bridge. And I was there when I was in high school on a rafting trip. And the day that I was there, oh, I keep meaning to look this up, actually. The day that I was there, we did the rafting, and then you come out on the side of the river, and it was right at the bottom of the bridge. So we were looking up at the bridge. And while we're down there hanging out, taking the boats out and everything, they were filming a commercial that I think was for a Jimmy, and they bungee jumped a truck off of the bridge. Wow.
And so, that sounds familiar.
It was either like a Jimmy or an Explorer or something, but I think it might have been a Jimmy. But anyway, we got to watch them bungee jump a truck off off the bridge. It is so far up there. Like I couldn't imagine.
When you guys go, do you camp in tents or do you have?
We have. This time we got Airbnbs. Because we went to New River Gorge for a few days. We got an Airbnb there in a little town called Oak Hill. And it was nice. It was just like a house in a neighborhood. But it was really central to all the stuff that was there. And then we were there for a few days, and then we drove another 5 hours south to Pigeon Forge in Great Smoky Mountains, also National Park. And so we drove down there and got a cabin that was on the top of a mountain looking out over the Smoky Mountains. Just ridiculous. Like, just so beautiful. And the cabin was really cool and nothing fancy, but it was just really nice. Lots of windows and had pool tables, so we got to play a lot of pool. And we had a bear come up and try to get in our car one night, so that was pretty cool. And so there's like paw prints on the windows.
That's so scary.
And so I messaged I got up one morning and there were bear prints outside of our door on the porch. And I was like, oh, that's, So I messaged the homeowner and just told her, I was like, hey, just heads up, you know, we didn't have any damage or anything. And so she sent me video from the doorbell camera of the previous people that stayed there of the bear, a bear, coming up and like getting up on the windows of the house and like looking in and stuff. And then told me that it actually broke one of the windows of their car and tried to get food out of the car.
Oh, God.
So we didn't leave any food in our car. So he just looked around, didn't do any damage. But so the whole time we were like looking for bears, trying to find bears. But we were in this place that was all the way at the top of this windy road at the top of a mountain. And there were other cabins, you know, next to us on each side, but we couldn't see them. It's one of those things where all of the windows on all the places just look at the beautiful view. And so you feel like you were completely secluded. But I mean, we did a bunch of hiking. We went to Dollywood one day, which was actually a lot of fun. And
Mountain Knife Shop is kind of in that vicinity.
Oh, yeah?
It's the biggest knife store in the world.
Oh.
I've been there a few times. And did you say you were in Oak Hill, West Virginia?
No. Yes. Oak Hill, West Virginia.
That's where Hank Williams died.
Really?
January 1st, 1953. Wow. You didn't happen to see any commemorative spots for that, did you?
I didn't, but I wasn't paying attention.
Was it in a car?
He died in the back of his Cadillac, yeah. He was driving from like Ohio to West Virginia, something like that. And he was dead in the back of the car, and they got to the show, and the guy checked, went to wake him up, and he didn't wake up.
Yeah.
29 years old.
Dang. No, I didn't see anything about that, but I wasn't looking. You know, it might have been there. But we did a bunch of hiking in both places, some really beautiful places, and did some kayaking where a couple of the rivers in the New River Gorge where multiple rivers touch where they land together. And so there's all these falls, not big, like tall waterfalls, but there's all these falls where the elevation changes. And where all of the water flattens out, you can kayak out there and you're surrounded by these multiple falls of different levels and stuff around. You can get up and like walk across them and everything. It was really, really cool. Perfect weather. Not warm enough to like be in the water, but perfect for hiking. And took the kids to do paintball. And only my youngest had ever done paintball. Jenny and I, before we had kids, used to play paintball like every Sunday afternoon with a bunch of friends. So we would go out to this little section of woods, this little island in Savannah, and just like, it was paintball like every weekend. And so we destroyed the kids, which was really fun. And we, you know, there's like a company there that just like brought all the gear, you know, and they just like laid it out. Everybody suited up. And then they had this like fenced in area that was, you know, it was in the woods, lots of terrain, lots of things to hide behind. And it was just 2 hours of of just shooting at each other. And it was so much fun. We had a blast. And I still have a bruise on the inside of my leg from my daughter shooting me.
But, oof.
Yeah. I mean, like a big bruise. Like the paintballs are about, I don't know, an inch, 3/4 of an inch or something. And so she shot me. We shot each other at about 12 feet away from each other. We were really close, closer than either one of us thought we were. I hit her in the shoulder. She was fine. She hit me on the meaty inside part of the thigh. And that little 1-inch circle stayed there for a day or so and then turned into like a 6-inch yellow purple.
Ouch.
Big. Yeah. But it was a lot of fun. We had a really good time.
Nice.
So anyway, that was my vacation.
Yeah, that was cool.
I had a good time. What have you guys been up to?
I put out a video each month. I'm making a Onefinity video. And this month I put out shelf brackets. I thought it was going to be a reel, which is interesting. You just never know. You know, we've been at this for how many, 12, 15 years, and who the hell knows what's ever going to work. So I put out this reel and all week long. Well, I put out this video, but as I was editing it, I'm like, there's not enough here. It's just a reel. I say, look, I'm going to make a shelf bracket. I hand draw it on the iPad, and then I CNC it out, spray paint it black, and install it. That's 30 seconds of camera time. But I was able to stretch it out to 8 minutes. All my original videos, by the way, like all my videos that I very first started, like my first 2 years, were all 6 minutes. That was always my number, 6 minutes long. And so I put this video out at 8 minutes. I stretched it. I did a little, talked a little bit, and obviously stretched that a little bit with the voiceover. And I did a couple of other, I went back and forth and shot a couple of little inserts. And the video performed 2 of 10. Who knew?
Oh, nice.
I thought it was going to be a dud, but it did well. And I did put out a reel. If my video is short enough, what I'll do is I'll take the whole thing and I'll just jam it into 1 minute. And that becomes the reel. And it's extremely fast, obviously. The reason I do 1 minute, even though you're allowed to do 3-minute reels now on Instagram, but you're only allowed to use 1 minute of unlicensed music. So I did that. I was like, oh, we got 3 minutes. So I made a video 3 minutes long once. And I put on a cool soundtrack that ended 1 minute into the soundtrack. And then it just seemed like there was something wrong. And so now I still just stick to the 1 minute just because I could pick an interesting jazz beat or something. So I did that. And this week I started on my go-kart. I'm making an electric go-kart with Sparks is helping me. Sparks makes electric motorcycles in Connecticut. And Matt, I met Matt at Maker Camp this year and we've agreed to collaborate. So he's ordering and helping me out with the electric drivetrain. And I'm figuring out all the other parts, the frame. I'm going to make a little mini, there's an actual name, the category. I can't remember what it's called, but I'm making like a 1920s car, go-kart racer with the open wheels and the cigar shaped body. There's an actual category. Dave, does that ring a bell? Do you happen to know what that category would be?
No.
Like mini cart. It's, even though it doesn't, it's not very descriptive. It's like mini cart. And then
like one seater open wheel. I don't know.
Yeah, a lot of people know exactly what I'm talking about when I say it, but I keep forgetting what that term is. So I'm working on that. That's all welding and sheet metal, which is good because I'm going to this thing in Texas to learn sheet metal. It's just perfect timing how to shape sheet metal. So I'm thinking about maybe doing an aluminum shell over it. And yeah, so I'm excited about that. I'm going to engineer and fabricate everything. I bought 4 front motorcycle wheels on Amazon. And those are my 4 wheels. So I'm going to be building the go-kart frame and everything inside of that.
What size are the rims?
With the rubber and everything, they're 19 inches.
Okay. That's a big boy.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of big, 6 feet by 3 feet about. Yeah. I'm going to try and make it as compact as possible. But it is going to get a little oversized. But it's a challenging build for me because there's lots of precision when it comes to pillow blocks for the rear axle and the steering mechanism for the front wheel. I'm going to be making up all the steering mechanism and everything. I'm just going to make it all from scratch. It'll be like my 3rd or 4th one in a row. Maybe this time I'll get it right.
So every year you kind of challenge yourself to do something bigger and better and something that you don't know. So I kind of see it as your Colin Furze and your go-kart. Because you just outdo yourself every year.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I'll never compete with Colin Furze. He's insane. But
Competing with your previous year's go-kart.
Every time I think of hydraulics, I think of Colin. I'm like, God, he's done so well with hydraulics. I got to do something. I've been fiddling on my tow truck, talking about hydraulics. I got the tow truck driving and running. I just still haven't figured out the hydraulics. I might play with that today. I started on the graveyard house this week. We ripped up another floor. I'm waiting on my architect's plans to come through. We need to look at the first draft just to see what changes are going to take place. What else? Oh, I got my old Cadillac. Some of the Instagram, everybody's seen on Instagram. I got my old Cadillac, which my Patreons know this. I haven't told this really publicly, but the Cadillac came with a 1995 Jaguar convertible. And so the Jaguar, I've been wrenching on that a little bit.
It was
in
the glove box, you know.
So I had to do some work on the Jaguar. This is all Patreon stuff. When Peter was pushing me, my old friend pushing me to buy the car, he's like, if you buy your Cadillac back, I'll give you the Jaguar. So I was like, all right. Twisted my arm. So it's a 1995 Jaguar convertible. The British called the Cabriolet. 19 XJS Cabriolet convertible. It's got the straight six cylinder. I thought it had the V12 because nobody at the house knew. Everyone's like, I don't know. It's got a V12 in it. And then I opened the hood. I'm like, oh, it's the straight six, which is fairly desirable because it's a much more reliable engine. But it's, somebody just came in my room. I thought it was the cat. And so I've been wrenching on that and collecting video for that. So that'll ultimately become a video where I'm going through it. The Cadillac is not perfect, but it still only has 8,000 miles on it, but there's various parts. Like I'm going on eBay, I'm buying filler panels and replacing them. Small stuff. Damp, smells damp inside, needs a new roof. It needed a new lifting cable to lift the roof up and closed. And the headlights were all kind of cuckoo coogly and pointing in every direction. There's four headlights and those adjustment screws because it sat outside for too long and the weather has taken back some of the plastic. And so the spring-loaded headlights are all pointed where the spring is pulling them because the adjustment screw plastic is broken. But I've replaced all that. So I'm going through it slowly, replacing everything. And that's it. And the next thing I need is a roof. But it opens and closes. That's only if I want to go. I could just leave the roof open. It's all kind of torn. And
is that a hard
I opened
thing
it one time and closed it, and there's like seven more rips in it from opening and closing it. But that's just because it's dry rotted.
Is that a hard thing to find, or does it have to be made, or what?
I can buy the roof. It's only about $8,000, which includes the glass back window. Sorry, $800, not $8,000.
Oh, I was going to say, cars at the same time, so it's only $8,000.
No, it's only $800 for the top, but that's uninstalled. Installed, I'm sure, is at least the same or twice that much to install it. So I'm trying to find skilled installers in New York State. So if anybody knows any, I called three people, no one called me back. So if anybody has any insight to a convertible roof installer that's skilled and experienced in the New York State, Massachusetts, Connecticut, whatever.
That's not something you would take on yourself?
It just seems too complicated. It's the type of thing where there's so many. You might need to be.
I've never heard Jimmy Duresta say it seems too complicated.
Well, there's probably some. I look at that and I think to myself, this is a job that you would learn as an apprentice. You understand what I'm saying? There's like so many nuances. I'm looking at the roof. I don't even know how to remove it cleanly, aside from just cutting it off. I'm not seeing any attachment screws that are clearly marked. So that's what I'm. These guys do this often. So if I'd rather pay a professional if I could.
Yeah.
So that's it.
I'm just giving you a hard time.
If I can find it. But like I said, in the meantime, the roof's always going to be down anyway. It's just in case I get caught in some sort of rain. But I do want to bring the car back to nice. So that'll be a video. And
you could always you could do like your Woody and make like a wooden strip top for it.
Yeah. Like that removes comes off like the Mercedes roof that you need three people to take it off.
Well, there's like a Jeep where you could just lift the top off of it. You could just make that type of wooden top for your Cadillac.
Strap
real
on.
Classy. I'm joking, by the way.
I'm already picturing it.
Yeah.
So I'm slowing down.
It's a done deal.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what I've been up to. Just playing. I got so many loose ends, but they're all getting done and I'm having fun. And pottery. Get my pottery section set up. I ordered a pottery wheel from Laguna, and I'm real excited once I get my pottery wheel.
Laguna, like the tool company?
No, it's Laguna's a clay company. It happens to be in Laguna Beach also. Laguna Clay. Laguna, yes, it's called the Laguna Clay Company. So I ordered a pottery wheel from them. And yeah, I'm real excited to get my hands on. I've been making the sewer caps. I got to send you guys the ceramic sewer caps. I've been making them just to gain experience with the glazes and stuff. I got like 40 ceramic sewer caps. Rachel's like, okay, what are we going to do with all these? I go, I don't know. Maybe I'll sell them. Some people ask for sets and maybe I'll sell them. Maybe I'll just give them away. We'll see. Maker Camp. I'll sell them at Maker Camp.
There you go.
But that's it. Dave?
Well, I am working towards the art show. I got back. This thing is so heavy. I got back to the cassette tape.
Ooh.
Oh, awesome. I saw that on your Instagram the other day. It's cool.
Yeah. So it's almost done. Mostly just sanding and finishing. It weighs a ton because it's like 2 inches thick. But,
that's so cool.
It doesn't do anything, and that's exactly how I want it. I know.
Is it all wood inlay?
Yeah.
It's all various tones of wood.
Except for the reels and the tape that you see. There's a piece of clear acrylic where the window is. Inside there, what looks like the magnetic tape is 3D printed, and then the reels are 3D printed too. What's left is...
That's I'm a nice contrast, though, to see, because it makes it look like a real big one, a real one.
It works very well. And the last thing I have to do is I got to put screws in the four corners. It's based on these old cassettes from the 80s. It's loosely based. It's not exact, but it's pretty close. And there's little screws in the corners, so I'm going to add that. And then there's going to be a little loop of tape just sticking out the bottom. And then I can put finish on it. I was going to try to have that done by this weekend, and I decided that I'm going to put out a different video because this one needs a really good finish. You know, sometimes we get to the end of the project. Sometimes I get to the end of the project and I kind of rush the sanding and finishing, and I want this one to be perfect. So I'm going to take my time and do it right. Awesome. But yeah, I know I'm going to get a lot of comments of saying, you should make the reels move, or it should be a Bluetooth speaker, or you should make a pencil. And we've discussed all of this. Right. And I don't want it to do anything.
No one's going to understand the pencil reference. Well, if everyone's our age, they'll know.
Yeah. We did come up with some cool concepts that we're definitely not doing, but it would be really cool if the wall had a tape door that did the soft open, and you could stick the whole thing in there and close it. That would be fun. On the blank cassettes, you know, there's the little tabs on the top that you could break off so you don't re-record them. So you don't record over your mixtape. And we thought about, making those little tabs, breaking them off, putting a piece of tape over that, it says sad songs on there, crossing that out, and then putting another playlist on there, like almost like there's a story of like you broke up with your girlfriend and now you've made a new playlist. But
yeah,
I've spent enough time on it. It's done.
I remember crushing up a little piece of paper, like the wrapper for like a straw and filling that hole, like with like
jamming
a little
lump in there.
Jamming that hole full. So,
we always just put like Scotch tape over it, just to like,
So yeah,
cool. That looks awesome.
Just a little over 2 months away is the first day of the art show, so I'm just every day I'm doing a little something to push more towards that.
How are you feeling about that?
Okay,
that was a pregnant pause.
I know that towards the end I'm going to be a little busy and stressed, but I think that just comes with I know it's going to happen, so I'm going to just try to mentally prepare for that. What I haven't done, and I'm kind of scared to do, is make an inventory of what I do have, so at least I know how many pieces I have, and I don't really know, and I'm scared to take that inventory because I'm worried that I don't have enough. So that's, I'm trying to keep it to, like, there are, I've made art pieces over the years. Most of those pieces, I don't want anybody else to have. So they're not going to go into the show. It's like things that I was, so I did talk to the gallery owner and I'm like, can I put pieces in there that I'm not for sale? And he's like, you can. It's not common to do that, but you can. So
yeah,
we'll see.
You could just say it's already sold.
Could,
yeah. That's what you do.
But that's, yeah, that's how the gallery prompts. Owner gets paid too, is the commission from the sales.
Right.
But this is a very like DIY grassroots punk rock type of gallery. So it's not like there's no, you know, we're not going to be wearing suit and ties, and it's very, all the rules are pretty loose.
Cool. Yeah. I was going to ask you about if you had like a target number of pieces that you were shooting for or anything like that.
I don't really have a target number. I do want to make sure, like, I have he gave me the layout of the room, and I want to make sure, like, there's stuff on the walls, and some of the sculptures are freestanding or will need pedestals. I don't know if I have to make my own pedestals or if they have pedestals for me. But I've got a video coming out this weekend. It's kind of like a vlog video, and it's basically the announcement of the show, and, it's a lot of the things that we've talked about over the years. Like when we first started this podcast, I had a hard time calling myself an artist, and you guys were like, you're an artist, dude. Just get over yourself. And then now I identify with that, a little bit more just because I've done it. I've done some more pieces now, and I feel okay saying that. So there's a video coming out this weekend about that stuff. And actually I lost my train of thought of where I was going, but so I'm working, it's all I'm thinking about, just doing a little bit every night. Some things are not being filmed, some things are being filmed. So you're asking about the number of pieces. There is going to be a one large 4-foot by 8-foot piece. So the show is called Unsubscribe. That's the title of the show. And it's like a double meaning. It's, you know, it's got the YouTube meaning plus just unsubscribe from things you don't need to be, that don't need to be in your life. It's just kind of like a philosophy that I've lived, that I've kind of adopted over the last year or so. So that's the title of the show. And what I want to do is, I know like some of the art pieces are going to be like art pieces are, they're priced kind of high, you know, like you're not gonna, it's not like a craft show. You walk in and you buy something cheap and you walk away. They're going to be kind of expensive pieces. So I want to do one thing that is a little bit more affordable, but so it's going to be this 4-foot by 8-foot sheet of plywood. And I've made a logo. It's going to say unsubscribe on there. And then on top of that plywood is going to be 200 pieces that also say unsubscribe that cover that up. And so each one of those 200 pieces will be for sale. Like typically when you go to a gallery show and you say you want to purchase something, that piece stays there until the end of the show. So this is happening over 2 days. So if you're out of town and you buy something, you most likely will have to have it shipped. But this is one of those things where if you want part of the unsubscribe logo that I'm making, you can buy your little piece of that right there. So as you remove the piece, it still says unsubscribe behind it. So you can, it's kind of like a, almost like an interaction type thing where as pieces are being removed, it kind of evolves and changes, and they'll
That's
be
awesome.
Yeah. So I have the concept of that 4-foot by 8-foot thing, but I don't know exactly how I'm doing it. I don't know what each one of those 200 pieces looks like or what it's made out of. My first thought is trying to just take an all of my scraps and cutting them up into thin strips and just doing this chaotic collage of pieces of wood. And then, so when you buy your little piece, it doesn't say unsubscribe, but it'll have portions of that letter on there and you'll have like a 1 of 200 thing. So, yeah, that's what I'm working on.
Hmm. Awesome. I'm not working on anything.
That's okay. That is
what's
totally
your next video,
okay.
Bob? What's your
not
next
entirely
video?
True. Do what?
What's your next video? Do you know?
Well, I am working on. I told you guys about the kayak rack thing that I was doing with the PVC. Did I tell you about that?
Because we need one. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. Well, maybe I just told you. I don't know.
Anyway, yeah, cool.
It's a PVC really simple rack for a kayak and two paddle boards, and instead of just using plumbing fittings, I found this company called Formufit that makes...
is it all these unusual fittings that aren't necessary
like
for plumbing?
Yeah, like five-way connectors and three-way connectors and all these like strange... They're more for structures and furniture than plumbing. And so I finished up that thing yesterday, and they even have like a caster fitting that will go in the pipe or in one of these connectors, so you can add casters to a PVC structure really easily. And so I did that in like... I cut all the PVC, but I put the whole thing together in like 15 minutes yesterday. And it's all press fit. There's no glue or anything. And it's awesome. it's sturdy. Everything is tight. And I was afraid it would be kind of rickety, you know, and like make noise when you moved it and stuff like that. But everything is tight and it holds the boats perfectly well. And they're easy to get on and off and everything. So I did that. And then that's part of doing, the purpose was that, but the video is that plus having to pull everything out of this garage that's just become like a pile of stuff and organizing the garage so that this kayak thing can go back in there along with everything else. So that's what I've been doing. Basically the last 2 days, painted the garage, emptied it out, painted it, and I'm trying to put everything back in there. And then I hurt my back this morning, so I'm a little bit worried about finishing up today, but I have to finish it up today because I got to move on to the next thing. And so the next thing is, I guess I'll go ahead and give it away because it's not a fully formed idea, but I might be able to get some feedback from you guys. So I'm basically looking to make a binder, like a, you know, three ring binder. I don't know what you call that, like the spine metal piece. You can buy just the metal
with
piece.
The snap ring binder, like from.
Yeah. But, you know, just the metal flat thing with the rings, you can buy that with holes in it and then little Chicago screws where you can put it onto a thing. It's like a replacement part.
Wood
and so I was
leather.
Thinking through yesterday.
What are Chicago screws?
Chicago screws are like, I don't know if that's actually what you call them, but it's like it's like a male and a female screw that you screw together.
They have the same head on both sides.
They're both, okay. Yeah. All right.
It's like a through screw that has a closure on both sides. And so I was thinking yesterday, sitting out trying to come up with like, how would I make an interesting binder? Or what could I do that would be interesting? Not just like the design of it, but what materials, like what would be an interesting material? And so I went through all these different iterations in my head of making basically like a wooden box that was split around the middle and then had hinges on one side so that it would open like a book. And then this thing could be mounted on the inside of it. And that might work, but it's got problems around like the hinges. If you don't use metal hinges, like if you use a fabric hinge, then you have to sandwich that fabric in between multiple hard things so that it won't peel away. And then you probably have to have some sort of a through connector. So I went down that path for a while and it was like, well, maybe that becomes too bulky. So what about if it's just a leather back? The whole thing is really just a sheet of leather with some sort of some way to latch it. Mm-hmm. A more traditional book binder kind of thing. But then, like, I don't want it to just be leather. I want it to have some interesting material. So I was looking at how to do acrylic, like an acrylic inlay, which would have to have a hard back. And then if you have a hard back, then you cut out the leather for the inlay, then the leather's going to stretch and it's not going to match up. You know, it's like, it's going through all these different things and between metal hinges and fabric hinges and leather hinges and acrylic hinges. And I don't know. I got to a point where like I have a bunch of half ideas and they all have a problem. There's nothing that I'm really like, oh, yeah, that's the combination right there. And of course, I know I'm making it more complicated than it needs to be. I could just cut out a material and it would be simpler. And
that's what we do.
That's right. That's me.
About five years ago,
Jimmy's drawing something, so I assume he has an
idea. Go ahead. I'll show you in a second.
About 5 years ago, I made a wooden and leather trapper keeper. So it was basically a binder, but I just looked in the closet. I can't find it, but it's something that I want to redo and redo it better.
Have you thought about that, Bob? Like a traditional portfolio from that we used to have when we were in college?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like with the box, it's basically a box that's slit around three sides.
Well, but this one, one side completely traps the other side. So this whole side.
Oh, it goes in it? Okay.
Yeah, it goes in it like that. So whatever this exterior is completely on top of that one.
So the problem with that, and that was my first idea, the problem with that is if you use a fabric hinge, so if you have hard shell laid flat and then you lay fabric across it and glue it, whatever, then you have to put something else on top of that fabric to sandwich the
fabric.
Yeah, to
trap both sides of the hardboard.
Right. Yeah. And that is a possibility, but then it starts to become thick. Right, because you've got two layers of hard material with a flexible material in between.
Wait. Do you have to sandwich it? Why can't you have the fabric exposed?
I mean, you can, but I feel like it would peel away from the hard surface. Like if you don't have something keeping it down, you know, if you put like spray adhesive or something on fabric on material, as you start to bend them away from each other, they're going to peel away.
Poor glue.
I would. There's got to be some sort of like flexible epoxy that you could pour on it, and so like it's never coming off, and maybe it has enough flex for the hinge.
See, I did it with bookbinding leather on the outside, and then with a fabric on the inside, with enough space between it so that it folds 90 degrees, and then when it folds 90 degrees, the outside has like a nice taut look, so it just gives it a nice clean curve.
So, wait, what were the materials on that? Show me that
again. So, like, if you're using, like, a book board or even a thin plywood on the inside, and the outside you use a book binding leather, which is much thinner. It's real leather, but it's thin.
Okay.
And the inside you use any kind of maybe a canvas fabric or even more of the same leather, but you just got to compensate for the bend. So, if it's going to bend 90 degrees, you just got to make sure you just experiment with to know how much to leave. You know, experiment with just what the thickness of your material is. And because if you glue this all tight up and you go to bend it, you'll rip your binding. But if you leave a little gap, like maybe when you glue the pieces of material down on the leather, you drop an 1/8-inch strip between them. Then you remove the 1/8-inch strip. It's just to maintain a gap. It's a little bit of book binding. It's a little bit of playing around. And when we get off later, I'll show you my portfolio that I made. Okay. The same way. I mean, it's all beat up now because it's 30 years old, but it's a way I did that drawing that I showed you. If it's something to consider, maybe it'll inspire some other thing.
Yeah.
But it's just like a book cover, basically. You can, as long as the material wraps completely around the outside and then right around the joint on the inside, the outside material and the inside material create the joint between the two hard surfaces.
Yeah.
And if you maintain a gap and... It's, like I said, you just got to play with it to get it right.
Yeah, I think I don't have probably the right leather for the outer. The thinnest leather I have would probably be too thick for what you're saying.
Yeah, so you got to really get bookbinding leather because you think the only thing you're going to end up making is like something that looks like it's from Lord of the Rings if you use a thick leather like that. Yeah. You know, something that looks like it's like from the Middle Ages. You wrap it with it looks like something from like a, you know. This looks like an old scribe book versus...
Which also has other issues because then you have to wrap it around the outside edges and, you know, you have to have a finished edge around. And the thicker that is, the harder that is to handle. Yeah. David, how did you do the hinges on
maybe it'll inspire you.
Yeah. How did you do your trapper keeper?
So I just have exposed leather all on the inside. I just took a screenshot from my video that I'm going to drop it into the chat here. But yeah, it's just exposed leather. It looks like it's funny. I have to watch my own videos to see how I did something, but,
I can't remember.
I may have doubled up the leather on the inside and stitched it together. So but I'll send you some screenshots.
Yeah. Stitching was something I thought about as well. And I was trying to actually figure out if there was an interesting way to have a hard surface for the, like the covers and the spine, and then have a flexible, like leather fabric or something over the outside, and laser cut all of it at the same time so that there were stitching holes through the hard surface and through the flexible.
It's looking like that's kind of what I did here. I'm pretty sure I lasered the different layers, so all the holes lined up perfectly.
Gotcha. Oh, I see. Yeah, I can see the bottom edge of your... Okay. You know, I think that's the problem. Okay, so you did something really smart here.
What are you going to do it for, Bob?
I'm the problem. That's what I was trying to say. So you did... The hinge is the center layer, and you put stuff... You put the shell on the outside. I was thinking of the other way, of putting the hinge... I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. But I was thinking of the opposite of what you're doing, but this makes a lot more sense. So
I think of it as like I just remember wood shop from high school, and somebody made a roll top desk. And I remember our instructor, he was just like, yeah, you just take old jeans and you line up all those pieces with jeans on the inside. And so that was my introduction back in 1992 of a fabric hinge.
That's a nice idea.
Yeah. Another thing I was looking at, and I went ahead and ordered them just because, you know, how we are when we go to Amazon. It's just like, oh, yeah, I could probably use this and this. And so I ended up ordering a bunch of stuff that I won't use. But acrylic hinges, have you ever used like a glue-on acrylic hinge?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that is.
So it's a hinge made out of acrylic, and you can get them in different colors and stuff. And they do have some that have adhesive backs on them. They have some that have screw holes already molded into them. But the ones that I've used before are just flat. They have no screw holes or anything. And the idea is that you are going to solvent, like glue it to other acrylic. And so you lay it in place, and then you just use, you know, acrylic cement, and it will bond to the pieces that it's hinging.
It's welded, really, basically. Yeah.
And they're really cool because they're, you know, you have no exposed fasteners, and it's strong and usually the same color or whatever. So I got some of those thinking that, you know, worst case, I could do an acrylic outside shell and then do the hinges on the inside so that you wouldn't actually see them. But then when you open it up, you'd have nice looking hinges and everything. So once everything gets here and I finish up what I'm currently doing, I'll try to figure it out. But it's going to be another one of those where I'm trying to, with all of my travel and all of my stuff, I'm trying to like start being really productive for a while so that I can then not be productive for a while. So this is going to be one of those that I'm probably doing faster than I really need to do it, you know, trying to make it quick, but.
And that's where things go wrong.
Usually, yes. And I know that going into it. So I'm trying to also not overthink stuff like this as much. Like, this is probably a whole topic in and of itself, but it's super easy for me to take any project and overthink it to the, you know, trying to like pre-solve problems that don't exist yet, trying to pre-answer comments that don't exist yet, and I just overthink all of the stuff. And I think that ends up causing me to narrow my field of experimentation, because it's just like, well, I'm going to have to deal with this, or I'm going to have to deal with this, or I'm going to have to go around. And so I'm trying not to overthink some of these smaller things that are not construction. They're not, there's no consequence to them. It's just a little thing, right? And if the binder doesn't work, it's not the end of the world. So I just want to like get some stuff and start doing it and see if I can make it work and not try to pre-solve everything. So anyway,
it's funny, in this weekend's video that I posted, I was trying to think of things to like fluff the video up to take it more than from a reel to a real video. And at one point, my old portfolio has been kicking around, and Rachel's like, oh, why don't you show how you used to do it by hand? And that's why I put that in the video. If you guys get a chance to see it, I show these screens that I made for a house in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I made like 12 or 13 of these screens, all cut by hand with a jigsaw. I came up with the paper pattern, hand drew the paper pattern, the client approved it. And then I was like, how am I going to make these each image look symmetrical? So this is what I left out of the story. I took, if the screens were, say, 30 inches across, I took two 15-inch strips and spray glued them together and drew half the pattern on it, jigsawed out the pattern by hand with a hand jigsaw, and then pulled apart the spray glue and then glued them end to end. So I had like a perfect, it was like making like mm-hmm. a heart out of paper. Mm-hmm. Like, so that's how they all look perfectly symmetrical. But if you laid them on top of one another, you would see the handiwork that nothing's exactly the same, but they looked CNC'd even though I handmade them. Go ahead, Bob. Go ahead, Dave.
You're probably going to go ahead and say it. Did you jigsaw each one, or did you jigsaw the pattern and then do a pattern template routing thing?
Everything was jigsaw because it was too intricate for your router bed at the time. I mean, I didn't know about that.
And what about all the sanding?
Oh yeah, no, it's just light sanding. And they didn't, what was interesting too, the similar is they like wanted them to feel like cast iron. So I made them out of MDF, gave them a light sanding, sprayed them with flat black, gave them another sanding, sprayed them again. And they were like, oh, we love it. And then I also put them on I made a whole track system. So all three of them slid to one window so you could open up the windows and slide them back and forth. So it was a three level track. So they could slide them all the way off, actually completely out of the way. I left space on one side of the window. And, the reason I put that in there is to say, hey, before you all say, oh, CNC isn't woodworking, blah, 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 blah. I just want to show you what I made 20 years ago by hand before CNCs. I said, and now you can't fault me for wanting to save some time instead of making.
They can fault you for anything.
Yeah.
But you've earned your place. Basically, you've earned the right.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I wanted to put out there. And it was welcomed very warmly. There's a lot of nice comments. Like they say, you could do anything, and we understand that you've earned your stripes. So, but it also illustrates what we've watched happen in the last 10 years and how the CNC machine has just become another tool. There were a couple of the guys that said, this isn't woodworking. I'm like, I don't care what you think it is. I have shelf brackets
Your buddy Nick would say that.
He might say that. Yeah.
He said it many times. Nick Hofferman said, this is years ago, so I don't, things can change, but he said, I won't have a CNC in my shop, because he owns like a little a big shop, and he had to have some CNC work done. And instead of buying one, he took it to a friend to have the CNC stuff, because he absolutely refused to have any computer controlled tools in his shop. But this was 5 years ago.
Yeah, that's funny. I wish I would have thought to bug him when he was here the other day about that, because I would have pushed him. Because we did have a side conversation about how a operating shop could earn money and be a little bit more fruitful. And we were talking about that. And I would have encouraged him, which I have in the past, but the conversation just hasn't come up lately. If you have a CNC machine, get a couple of operators, you could make all types of props all types of products, I meant to say. You could make all types of products, cutting boards, all kinds of stuff. And there could also be a hand element to it. You could cut the profile. And so the bigger point I was making is that in the last 10 years, the CNC machine has definitely proven itself to be the table saw of the future. It's like seven tools in a row. It's like seven tools combined. It's like so many things. And why wouldn't you? You know, why wouldn't you make it? And now you have like really talented woodworkers like Frank Hallworth, and who fully, completely understand the woodworking process, using it to their advantage.
He uses it like nobody else does.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
cause he's making these crazy jigs to get all these weird angles that all fit
that's
together.
That's what I'm saying. So like a legit woodworker can't look at him and go, yeah, I mean, I don't care if people say whatever they want, but I'm just saying in general how it's becoming a tool that is very credibly used in woodworking.
Yeah.
But there'll always be that person.
I don't really read comments of other people's videos, and I don't watch many woodworking videos, but it's been a really long time since I've seen anybody with that attitude.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's calmed down quite a bit.
That's what I'm saying. It's really coming to pass as just another tool in the shop.
Yeah.
It's also come down in price too. I mean, you can buy a CNC on Amazon for $300. So
I've watched, I remember opening up Rockler. Like when before, like we would go to the internet for every 10 seconds when you'd get magazines and you'd actually hang on to them and look through them. I remember looking in the Rockler magazines and there was always that one spread of like some CNC type thing. This is right at the beginning of the CNC revolution. And you know, it might've been thousands of dollars or whatever it was, but I was just like, wow. Can you imagine having the money to buy that thing just to do like a house number? Like it didn't occur to me like what you could do with it. Cause you know, it's like, it shows like an eagle. I'm like, who the hell is going to spend thousands of dollars to make an eagle? You could just go buy a cast iron one for 10 bucks and or cast zinc one off of a catalog, but it's come a long way. And now if you have one of those, like those CNC machines are like 18 by 12 inches. Like I said, you're making like house numbers and like corbels and stupid little things. And it's like, now it doesn't pay to have a CNC machine unless it's 2x3 or 4x4.
Yeah, there's a, I just quickly checked on Amazon. You can get a, it's basically a 26x12.5 inch CNC for $469.
Wow. That might be fun to play with.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah.
Well, you guys got anything else for this week? Didn't really have a topic. We did have a topic and we never got to it, but we can save
What was our topic? I forgot.
We were going to talk about like tinkering and the projects in between the projects and stuff, but we'll do that.
That's why I have so many cars now. My cars are my projects between the projects. I literally walk around, I'm like, oh, I haven't checked the... That's what I got to do next. Every day between things, I have to go and check the engagement lever on my hydraulic pump on my PTO under the tow truck. Because ChatGPT told me the cable's probably stretched, which is why my hydraulics aren't coming on. There's no leaks. There's no nothing. But either that or my PTO needs to be rebuilt, which will be fun. Another challenging thing. I learned so much by challenging myself. Honestly, it's just so stupid and passe. But that's why I buy these complicated things to fix. Like making that Cadillac last year, I learned so much about body work and like coach building. And if I did it again, I'd do it completely different because now I have more of a focused way of doing it correctly. Last year, I just was like piecing things together till it looked right. And it's all sturdy and strong and the car has been inside. So it's not beat up, but playing with the tow truck, I've totally challenged myself to fix things that I never knew I could be able to fix. And, you know, with what I have in my shop and, you know, it's always gets down to what can I do with what I have? Mm. And then I always make this mental comparison. Like if that person can do it, I could do it. If this person was able to do that, I could do it because I have all these resources around me. I just have to figure out leverage, mechanical advantage and how to make it work, whatever it is, moving heavy objects and fixing stuff. And like I said, I always think of Colin Furze when it comes to hydraulics, and I was always so enamored with his knowledge of hydraulics. And by buying the tow truck and just looking at how it works and just looking at the mechanisms in front of me and seeing where things go, it's like, oh, you have a pump, cables, the switches. It's becoming much more demystified by putting myself in the lion's den with these objects. So that's it. I'm done with my TEDx talk.
Cool. I want to thank our Patreon supporters for supporting the show and just for helping us do this. It's really awesome that we have people that want to help out and come and listen every week and always send us really nice notes and stuff. Huge thanks to everybody at every level over there at Patreon, but especially our top supporters. That's A Pretty Big Deal, Inc., Albers Woodworks, Chad from Mancrafting, Chris McCormick, Jim from Wiser Bees, Master of None, Nick Ryan, Odin Leathergood, Pete Rondo, Rich at Low End Design, Scott, Daddy Yourself DIY, The New Jakey Workshop, Tinia Space Industries, and Works by Solo. We are really grateful for all of you, and everybody gets the after show at every level. So if you want to go to patreon.com/makingit, sign up for $1 or for $1,000, nobody's done that, yeah, but you can, then you get the after show. And that's more podcasts, separate feed, and you get it all through Patreon. Go check that out. We would appreciate it very much. I don't have anything to recommend because I have not watched anything in a very long time because I've been on vacation.
Well,
there's a new album out. I can recommend an album if anybody's interested. Have you ever heard of the band Tiger Cub?
No.
Okay. You might like them. You might not. I'm hesitant to. I was telling people on our Patreon hangout yesterday. I like to make stuff. I'm hesitant to recommend music because I just assume that nobody likes the same music that I
like. Yeah.
And I don't know if that's because I think it's probably because I think I have better music taste than everybody else, but I don't want to say that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Like,
I think that's probably where it comes from. Anyway, they're not an amazing band. They're a good band, but they have a new album out. That's not their best album, but it's still pretty good. Really selling it, I know.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. But hopefully they're not listening.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like heavy-ish, but not super heavy. I don't know.
It's funny. You two are a different generation to me. Like when you guys talk music, you're on the same page, and I'm just like waiting to hear you say Chicago, Led Zeppelin, or something.
Well, I like them, but they don't come out with new music. So, you know.
There was a Robert Plant performance on
Colbert,
a week ago, and did a Led Zeppelin song.
It's getting a lot of heat. Yeah, it's good.
It was so good. Like his voice is so amazing that whatever age he is, 80 something, it was so good.
Yeah. Mm. I just looked at my history and I've watched about 7 or 8 videos of Chicago live from the early 70s and late 60s. So I recommend go watch Chicago. Terry Kath is like one of the most incredible guitar players, songwriters.
For real.
Insane. He died early. He died at 33 years old by a gun accident. It's a crazy story. And he's insanely talented.
So I just posted a live Chicago video on my personal Facebook a few weeks ago because I was just blown away by how good.
Was it the one at Tanglewoods? Tanglewoods, where he's wearing like a denim shirt?
I think so. Is it outdoor?
Yeah, they're like on a stage at night. It's Tango. It's someplace in New York. Rachel's like, oh, Tanglewood? We never go to Tango. We go to Tango.
And he just plays the solo. And I'm not really into solos and stuff, but it's just insane. Tore it up. And it was
25
so
or 6
rocking.
To 4. If you watch the live
song.
Solo.
It was that song. Oh, my goodness.
Because that keeps
goodness.
Popping up.
So the tragic story is, and I think about this all the time, but his last words were, don't worry, it's not loaded. And then accidentally shot himself. In the head, but that just that phrase, don't worry, it's not loaded. I don't know why it sticks
so
with
tragic.
Me, and it's tragic, and it's I don't know.
Supposedly, and then if you do some deep dive, there's a phrase where Jimi Hendrix said the only guitar player he thinks is better than him is Terry Kath.
Oh wow!
And if you watch that performance, you might agree for a second.
It's pretty good.
And so I know I've mentioned this before since we're on Chicago for a second. Look up Leonard and Friends. I've said it before, and it is a Russian band that plays Chicago covers. And they take, if you heard Chicago and these songs are so big and so rich, if you listen to them on a loud stereo or in a car or whatever, and you listen to Leonard and Friends, it's like the song on steroids. It is so incredible. And every video you watch is a live performance of that song. And there's 25 band members. Like instead of one of each of the horns, there's like 3 of each of the horns. And there's 2 guitar players in this. And what's crazy about Chicago is when you listen to a Chicago song, there's like 3 singers and you really like, wait, do their voices all sound exactly the same, or is it? Hmm. And they kind of sing in sequence with each other, so like you never see like anybody's gasping for breath. And Leonard and Friends does the same thing. It's such an incredible thing to watch these guys perform live, and they're in Russian, and so the guys are singing, and you could even tell some of them are singing, but they don't know what they're singing. They're just singing what they know, they hear, so they're not, not first language English speakers. You can kind of vaguely hear their accents, but it's so, so well done. It's funny. Every once in a while, Rachel will catch me. She's like, oh, you listening to that Russian band again? Like, it's so good.
I just put the, in our chat, the 25 or 6 to 4.
That's the one that I've been getting on this week. It's so funny. It's in the ether.
It's so good. It is just so freaking good. And I was not expecting that because I don't know much about Chicago and I don't think of them as a rockin' band.
But it's insane. Man, you know what it is? It's the horns. Having the horns in there makes you feel more, it's like more jazzy, but it's really
rock and roll. I hate the horns.
That's my favorite.
I'm going to send you the Leonard and Friends too.
All right. Okay. So anyway, my pick of the week is, and I just found this morning, this guy, the video is called I Built Five Giant Wooden Kaleidoscopes for an Art Show. And it's really cool. And I want to steal it. I'm not going to steal it, but it's one of those, like, I wish I would have done that. I want to do something, one piece that's somewhat interactive with the audience for the art show, where maybe they can take like a selfie or something that's hands-on. I don't know. And this video kind of like got the wheels turning in my brain, but it's a pretty cool build. I built five giant wooden kaleidoscopes.
Cool. Jimmy, you got anything?
No, I'm just going to recommend Leonard and Friends again, since I listen to them all the time.
Okay.
I'm going to send it to you. And just check out Live Chicago from the early 70s.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, thanks for hanging out with us, and we'll maybe catch you next week if we record before Jimmy leaves. And if not,
yes,
we'll catch you after that.
Bye, guys. Thank you.
Later.
Love you.